It's a minute before 12. Good afternoon. Thank you for tuning in. This is Public Radio KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM, live on the web at kmxt.org. Translators in the villages at K269 AW Larson Bay, K269 AX Karlik, K269 AY Akiak, K269 AZ Old Harbor, K220 AU in Port Lyons. Currently 50 degrees out at the airport with 71% humidity, a west wind to 10 miles an hour, gusting to 21 with 10 miles of visibility. We're at 50 here on Signal Hill as well. It's a bit overcast, but it's a fairly pleasant day. It says showers maybe until 1 o'clock, but then after that, just cloudy skies with a high near 52. West winds 5 miles an hour. There is a 60% chance of precipitation. Maybe we've already passed that 60%. Drops down to 30% for tonight. Scattered showers before 7. Cloudy skies low around 43. Northwest winds 10 miles an hour. Mostly sunshine tomorrow with a high near 51. Calm winds become southeast 5 miles an hour in the afternoon. Tuesday it is, huh? Afternoon in Chiniac Bay, southwest 10, 2-foot seas, rain showers, northwest 10, 2-foot seas, no rain showers tonight. Variable less than 10, becoming south 10 in the afternoon, seas of 3 feet tomorrow. Marmot Bay this afternoon, southwest 15, 3-foot seas, rain showers, west 15, diminishing to 10 after midnight with seas of 2 feet. Variable less than 10, becoming southeast 10 in the afternoon, seas of 3 feet tomorrow. We have the consolidation folks coming in. The people that are on the consolidation committee are going to be talking with Jared here at 12:30 on Talk of the Rock. News from NPR first, then local news and Alaska Fish Show coming your way next.
NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. In testimony to members of Congress today, U.S. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin is strongly defending his department's handling of federal loan programs for struggling businesses during this coronavirus pandemic. Here's NPR's Windsor Johnston.
The $2 trillion relief package passed by Congress and a follow-up measure includes more than $500 billion in low-interest loans to help small businesses keep payroll. Now, Mnuchin's responding to a Congressional Oversight Commission report that found only one of the new federal lending programs is operating.
We are just starting to get these facilities up and running. We want to have a better idea as to which one of the facilities needs more capital, as well as the potential for adding additional facilities. So I expect to allocate all the capital as needed, as was given to us.
Mnuchin told the Senate Banking Committee two more will be up and running by the end of the month. Windsor Johnston, NPR News, Washington.
Under the unrelenting threat of coronavirus, health care is becoming the heart of the Democratic Party's political strategy heading into November's presidential election. NPR's Susan Davis reports on a memo released today by a coalition of Democratic committees representing governors, attorneys general, and members of Congress.
The strategy memo says Democrats will make protecting and expanding health care access the focus of all of their campaigns. The issue helped deliver Democrats a House majority in 2018, and they think it can work again this year. Illinois Congresswoman Sherry Bustos runs the House Democrats campaign operation.
Health care doesn't matter if you come from a district that Donald Trump won or a district that is overwhelmingly Democrat. Health care is the number one issue.
Democrats say the Trump administration's ongoing effort to repeal the Affordable Care Act with no plan to replace it will again hurt the Republican Party. Trump has promised to offer a, quote, phenomenal health plan during his reelection campaign, but has not released it yet. Susan Davis, NPR News, Washington.
Anger over the shooting death of a young black man in Georgia and the two-month-long delay in the arrest of his white killers is fueled by yet another video out this week. Body cam footage from a police officer shows Ahmaud Arbery in 2017 in a verbal confrontation with police who tried to search his car. They said it was parked in an area known for drug activity. When he refused, they attempted to use a stun gun on him, but it malfunctioned. Well, that was 2017, more than 2 years before his death. Today, Lee Merritt, the family's attorney, says those who argue Arbery's death was not racially motivated need to see the bigger picture.
The injustice, the greatest injustice in this case, was not only the brutal murder of Ahmaud Arbery, but the response by the legal apparatus of South Georgia. They responded as if his life didn't matter.
The local prosecutor's handling of the case involving Arbery's death in February is now under investigation. The father and son who shot Arbery say they thought he was a burglar. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
The local news is supported in part by Ardinger's Fine Furnishings, home of the Tempur-Pedic Ergo Collection and the Tempur-Pedic Breeze, made especially for those who sleep hot. The Breeze cushions and supports you while channeling excess heat away from the mattress. Tempur-Pedic's Ergo Base allows you to move the bed into multiple ergonomic positions for sleeping or relaxing. 486-5554.
And by Arctic Physical Therapy Services, Incorporated. Professional rehabilitation for all your physical therapy needs. We repair the world's most complex machine. 813 Mill Bay Road, 486-4499.
The state reported 3 new COVID-19 cases yesterday, 2 in Anchorage, 1 in Willow, bringing Alaska's running total to 399, with 345 of those recovered. Alaska's daily new case numbers have remained in the single digits for weeks now, and speaking during a press conference last night, State Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ann Zink said Alaska is in a place now where individuals can begin to cautiously widen their social circle.
So say that you have a close set of friends and you have kids a similar age that really enjoy playing together. That thinking about extending your bubble to kind of a double bubble, that those two families interacting together, but not expanding from outside of that double bubble.
Dr. Zink emphasized that risk is not the same for everyone and that those who work in healthcare or otherwise have contact with vulnerable people, including the elderly, need be much more cautious. Governor Dunleavy indicated that the state is poised to further ease restrictions on activities and businesses.
Make things simpler so people understand. So we're going to condense advisories down to a number of advisories, so you're not looking through pages and pages and pages. And it's really going to be advisories about you as individuals, what you can do to stay healthy and what you can do to ensure that others around you stay healthy.
The governor said specifics will be laid out in coming days, adding that as life returns closer to normal, more COVID-19 cases are to be expected, but that Alaska's healthcare system is equipped to handle them. Federal coronavirus relief funds for schools likely won't make up for the $30 million in education funding vetoed by the governor. As KRBD's Eric Stone reports, that means school districts across the state are trying to figure out how to plug the gaps.
State lawmakers added $30 million extra for schools across Alaska in their most recent budget, but Dunleavy erased those funds in a line item veto. In an April speech, he assured that those cuts in unrestricted general funds, or UGF, would be made up for by federal dollars.
There was a $30 million veto on UGF that I did, regarding education. There's money in the CARES Act for education, for that replacement.
In Ketchikan's case, that meant nearly $600,000 gone from its budget. But district business manager Katie Parrott presented the school board with a budget built around the governor's promise that once the federal money hit, it would be a wash.
The problem, however, is that it truly is not the same amount. It's not matching that amount for a few reasons.
Those reasons include the fact that federal money has strings attached. There are things it can and cannot be spent on.
Obviously, anything that's directly related to the district's response to the COVID situation.
Parrott says that includes health-related expenses, deep cleaning school buildings, buying more cleaning supplies, you know, stuff like that. But soon, district officials across Alaska were coming to realize what it could be used for. Tech upgrades for distance learning was a popular theme.
But the big difference is we can't use it for core classroom requirements. We can only use it to respond to COVID-19.
That's Jim Anderson. He's chief financial officer for the Anchorage School District. He says his district had other plans for Anchorage's approximately $8 million share of the state funding.
Increase our classroom, potentially mental health supports, and other things. CARES Act comes with strings, like all grant money from the federal government.
And the relief money has to be shared with private schools as well. And strict record-keeping requirements only make matters worse, says Ketchikan's Katie Parrott. Not to mention that districts are paying for pandemic-related expenses with the same amount of money the legislature earmarked for regular school budgets.
You know, the COVID situation has actually increased our cost. It hasn't reduced our cost.
She says that means there will have to be cuts for things CARES Act funding can't cover, notably teacher salaries. But Parrott says the district will likely be able to avoid layoffs. They'll cut a couple of new positions that haven't been filled, reassign staff, and do some other budget wrangling. But Norm Wooten, head of the Association of Alaska School Boards, says there's a big question that really hasn't been answered yet.
It's not completely clear whether that whether supplanting appropriated state funding is allowed under the CARES Act.
In fact, there's a section of the CARES Act that specifically prohibits states from using federal funds to reduce operating costs. In other words, states can't just cut their school budget and expect the feds to fill the gaps, which is what Alaska's governor seems to have tried to do. Within 3 weeks of Governor Dunleavy's vetoes, he fired off a letter to the Trump administration asking for leniency. Another section of the relief package allows exemptions for states that have, quote, experienced a precipitous decline in financial resources. In a letter to Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, he cites falling oil prices and the crumbling tourism season and the resulting hit to state revenue as justification for the cuts in state education funding. Back in Ketchikan, Katie Parrott lists these same factors for what worries her about future education funding.
I'm trying to be optimistic, but it's a concerning time. It's a little bit of a scary time.
It's unclear whether the feds will grant Alaska its waiver. Governor's office spokesperson Jeff Turner said Monday that the state is still waiting for an answer. In an email, Turner said that when Dunleavy explained his veto strategy to use federal money to backfill state cuts to schools last month, he was, quote, operating under information that it was an allowable use of CARES Act funds. But Turner acknowledges that federal guidance since then has clarified that that's not allowed. With additional reporting from Nat Herz in Anchorage, I'm Eric Stone in Ketchikan.
As fishermen enter Kodiak and other coastal communities at the start of the season, they're required by city and state guidelines to quarantine for 2 weeks. One innovative way to designate quarantine boats? Quarantine flags. Sarah Bruce is the owner of Kodiak Canvas Company. She says she's been contacted by canneries and private fishermen from all over the country to produce special flags to mark boats with quarantining individuals.
And they said, yeah, we won't need an indication that people are coming from out of state, because a lot of the crew who come from out of state and the captains, they will live on their boats. And so we would need to make sure that people know that somebody's on the boat who's come through the airport and they're quarantined. It will help keep the people who service boats safe. You know, we have a lot of the industries in town getting the boats ready to go, and so they need to know what precautions they need to take before they get on the boat, or to avoid that boat for 14 days until the quarantine time has passed.
Bruce said they're using a naval flag system to mark boats that are in quarantine and others that are contagion-free. Next time you're in the harbor, look out for a yellow Quebec flag. That means the boat is contagion-free. A black and yellow Lima flag indicates a boat with a quarantining crew. Coast Guard cutter Alex Haley returned home to Kodiak on Friday after a 97-day deployment. According to a Coast Guard statement, the 282-foot cutter spent much of the deployment patrolling the Aleutian Islands and Bering Sea, including the maritime dividing line between the United States and Russia. The need for law enforcement and search and rescue services continues even in the midst of a pandemic, said Commanding Officer Benjamin Golightly. Quote, despite the extraordinary external pressures they face while away from their families, Alex Haley crew members diligently executed their duties, end quote. The Alex Haley also conducted domestic fisheries enforcement boardings and responded to 3 search and rescue cases. In February, the cutter completed a readiness assessment in San Diego, which included testing capabilities in force protection, communications, damage control, engineering, medical response, navigation, and seamanship. The Alex Haley has been homeported in Kodiak since the ship was recommissioned in 1999. It is built to withstand extreme weather conditions, routinely operating in the Gulf of Alaska and Bering Sea. Cutter's primary missions are in fisheries, law enforcement, and search and rescue. Over the last decade, 2 massive marine heat waves, better known as blobs, swept the North Pacific Ocean, raising surface temperatures more than 5 degrees Fahrenheit, causing blooms of toxic algae and major die-offs in the ecosystem. A new study from the University of British Columbia reports that as these heat waves continue, they may have far more devastating implications to fisheries than previously predicted. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Kavitha George reports.
Climate scientists have known for years that global warming would have devastating long-term impacts on marine species. Already, fast-melting Bering sea ice is threatening spotted seals and other marine mammals. Warming Gulf of Alaska waters wiped out cod eggs in 2019, causing a crash in cod stocks. Record warm waters in the Yukon River last summer killed thousands of migrating salmon with heat stress. While climate change is steadily warming oceans all over the world, marine heat waves like the two North Pacific blobs are causing more dramatic swings in surface temperatures. In 2014 and again in 2019, ocean temperatures in Alaska rose as much as 5 degrees Fahrenheit. William Chung, a professor at the University of British Columbia's Institute for the Oceans and Fisheries, says marine heat waves will be frequent, and that will double the damage to Northeast Pacific fisheries.
The normal is actually changing over time. The normal now is cooler than the normal in the future for 50 or even 100 years later. And then on top of that, we add an additional few degrees Celsius. And so that would create additional challenges to fish stocks and fisheries.
Chung co-authored a report analyzing the impacts of marine heat waves on Northeast Pacific fisheries. The study teased out the impacts of high-intensity heat waves from the average effects of a warming climate over time. The findings show that by 2050, marine heat waves will double the impact to important fisheries species like pollock, cod, and salmon over previous predictions that only took into account the effects of climate change. It's an alarming forecast for Alaska, where seafood is a $5.6 billion industry and the state's largest export after oil and natural gas. Fisheries are the primary economic driver for coastal Alaskan communities and carry a globally recognized reputation for healthy management, even as climate change threatens the future of many essential stocks. According to Alaska Sea Grant, more than 100,000 Alaska natives and non-natives in rural communities rely on healthy fish stocks for subsistence living.
In our analysis, we showed that it will lead to a variety of impacts on fish stocks, like decrease in biomass, decrease in potential catches, driving changes in their distribution from where they are living now.
The study says previous research greatly underestimated the risk to fish stocks in a warming ocean. For instance, prior studies suggested sockeye salmon stocks in the Gulf of Alaska would fall 10 to 20% in the next 50 years due to climate change. Chung's team estimates the drop is more like 20 to 40% when you take heat waves into account. Chung says the compounded impact of heat waves will affect the entire ecosystem, including marine mammals and seabirds that rely on fish for food. The effects may already be present, he says, in the sweeping seabird die-offs that left almost a million birds starved to death along the West Coast in 2015 during the first blob. Chung says there's still a lot of research to be done on the impacts to the humans who rely on those fish, too.
And then we also look at the implications for the dependent human communities, particularly on fishers and fisheries that are dependent on this species. We are trying to quantify the economics as well as the social impacts associated with marine heat waves impact.
The new study models ocean changes on a macro scale. Anne Hollowood, who studies fish stocks for the Alaska Fisheries Science Center, says predictions about precisely how and when commercial fish stocks will be impacted is an ongoing field of work.
The implications of how fish move and their availability to coastal communities to harvest them is quite an important issue. To model the very nearshore ocean processes requires a finer scale resolution model than the models that William was using. You actually need to downscale the global ocean conditions.
Hollowood says it's still too soon to tell how marine heat waves will impact the future of commercial fisheries, and regulatory agencies are already adopting protocols to use research from Chung and other scientists to adapt management plans. For Alaska's Energy Desk in Kodiak, I'm Kavitha George.
Thanks, Kavitha. The census is back after being put on hold for the coronavirus. The survey is done every 10 years as a way for the federal government to track populations and decide funding amounts. KFSK's Angela Denning spoke with a few people in Petersburg involved with the census and has this report.
Petersburg resident Desi Burrell has been working long days, going door to door, leaving a census survey for people to fill out. The questionnaire is required for every household in the nation. The good news is it has only 9 questions.
They're really wanting to know
who was living in your household on April 1st? And it just kind of goes into a few questions like that.
Burrell and other census workers started the job on March 15th, and they worked 1 week before being shut down for the COVID-19 virus. Their work started back up on May 6th. It's been a little different than normal census years. It's now being done through no contact. Burrell doesn't ask people questions or help them fill out the census. She just hangs a bag with the questionnaire in it on their door.
So my job is mapping to make sure that your home is listed in our maps. And then I'm leaving a questionnaire for you to either do online through the phone help or mail in.
Burrell encourages people to go online and do the census that way, which takes just a few minutes. So why is the census so important? It helps the government know how much funding to give each community, says Tracy Welch.
When you respond to the census, you help your community get its fair share of approximately $675 billion in federal funding per year.
Welch is the tribal administrator for Petersburg's tribe, Petersburg Indian Association.
Census data impacts funding things for like schools, hospitals, fire departments, Medicare, Medicaid, SNAP, libraries, community centers, school meal programs, things like that. So it's really important that every 10 years we get this right.
Welch says historically, Alaska has had trouble getting accurate census counts because people live so remotely. This is particularly true for Alaska Natives. She says it's important for PIA tribal members to be counted because that opens up local funding for things like HUD, Housing Urban Development.
HUD uses the census data and the information that's provided on there to allocate funding for each of the individual tribes. So also, if you're Alaska Native but you're not counted, your community could lose approximately $3,500 annually for tribal programs.
In the 2010 census survey, only 27 people in Petersburg were counted as PIA tribal members. However, Welch says there are about 400 PIA tribal members, according to the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes and the Bureau of Indian Affairs. She says it's especially important for people to fill out the census correctly if they are in a mixed-race home. She says for people's native status to count, the native person needs to be listed as the first person on the survey.
So if you have a native person and a non-native person, the native person has to be listed as person number one on the census, first of all. And then when it gets to the question about race, you need to make sure that you list your federally recognized tribe. So if you live in Petersburg and say you're Tlingit, you would list Petersburg Indian Association. And if you're a member of Central Council, you could also list Central Council, or say you're a member of two or three different tribes for some reason if you have dual enrollment. You want to make sure you list all of those.
She says people should not list their native corporations, just the tribes that they belong to. Besides the 2020 census survey being distributed, there is another federal government survey going on. Burrell says this has caused some confusion for some local residents. The other survey is the American Community Survey, which is gathering housing and employment information. Petersburg resident Phyllis Hernandez is calling people for that survey, and it's much more detailed and takes longer than the 10-year one. Welch says that the 2020 census answers are extremely confidential.
Federal law prohibits sharing your information with anyone, including the IRS, immigration, etc. And any information that you provide cannot be used to come back at you for, determining your eligibility with government benefits such as SNAP, WIC, or TANF.
Burrell agrees. She says all of the information will remain protected.
They do not share any information with anybody. My particular questionnaire does not ask any financial information. It's pretty much who's living in your home on April 1st of 2020.
The census survey can be done online at census2020.gov. If you don't have a census ID number, just click on the link that says you don't have one. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. A letter to the salmon fleet outlines COVID fishing rules. More after this.
Over 30% of fishermen deaths in Alaska are from falling overboard. Life jackets save lives, and today's models fit right into your work gear. Learn more at amsea.org.
As thousands more boats get ready to head to the salmon grounds this summer, everyone knows it's not business as usual. United Fishermen of Alaska has penned a letter to the fleets with a helpful breakdown of the new rules in place during the COVID plague. UFA President Matt Allward of Homer says, above all, make sure you know what's required and have a plan to implement the protocols. As a vessel operator, he reminds that you are responsible for your crew's compliance on and off the boat.
You need to understand also if there's any local rules or mandates in the communities that we're fishing in. And on top of that, if some of the boatyards or harbors or even the supply stores and whatnot have their own rules, if you or your crew's coming from out of state, kind of important. Have it already figured out how you're going to quarantine where and how you're going to be able to get food and supplies without breaking quarantine, which the quarantine part of all of this for coming from out of state, I think, is by far the most important to really protect our communities and ourselves from bringing the virus in.
Wearing a mask is a main part of the protection plans.
The state has said under compliance, they don't have troopers running around making sure everyone's following this. It's really upon ourselves to self-regulate. Someone sees crew members from another boat running around town without masks and violating the rules, going to get the whole industry in trouble with the community. And really, fishing is a privilege, not a right. And out of respect for the communities we fish in, I'm hoping everyone will comply.
Salmon fishing kicked off at Copper River with a 12-hour opener on May 14th, with the catch just barely topping 3,000 fish. Boats were back out on the water yesterday. Base prices for the first fish were reported at $3 a pound for sockeyes and $6 or slightly higher for kings. That compares to record high prices last year of $10 and $14 a pound, respectively. Find the UFA letter and get COVID fishing updates at ufafish.org and find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
50 degrees currently out at the airport, 71% humidity, a west wind to 10, gusting to 21 with 10 miles of visibility. Mostly cloudy skies this afternoon, highs around 52, west winds 5 miles an hour, 60% chance of rain. Scattered showers before 7 p.m. tonight with cloudy skies, low around 43, northwest winds 10, 30% chance of precipitation. Mostly sunny with a high near 51, tomorrow calm winds become southeast 5 in the afternoon. So 19th of May, 5:38, sun came up, goes down at 10:37. That is almost right there at 17 hours of daylight, 3 minutes and 49 seconds of daylight time today. 69, again, the record high in 2002, 28, 2013, the record low. The synopsis, a 998 millibar low, 70 nautical miles northwest of Kodiak, will move to 100 nautical miles south of Cape Clear at 1,013 millibars early tomorrow morning and then dissipate in the afternoon. A weather front will move into the western Gulf Wednesday night. Marmot Island to Sitkanak small craft advisory through tomorrow. Southwest 25, 10-foot seas this afternoon. West 20, 9-foot seas tonight. Southwest 15, 9-foot seas on Wednesday. Chiniac Bay, southwest 10, 2-foot seas, rain showers this afternoon. Northwest 10, 2-foot seas tonight. Variable less than 10, becoming south 10 in the afternoon with 3-foot seas on Wednesday. Marmot Bay, southwest 15, 3-foot seas, rain showers this afternoon. West 15, diminishing to 10 after midnight with 2-foot seas tonight. Variable less than 10, becoming southeast 10 in the afternoon, 3-foot seas tomorrow. West 20, 5-foot seas, Shelikoff Strait this afternoon. Southwest 15, 3-foot seas tonight. Southwest 15, 3-foot seas tomorrow. Tides in the Kodiak District, our next one's a high tide at 1:15, 6.4 feet. The evening low tides, it's just before 7 o'clock, 1.5 feet. On the west side, the Uganic tide's at 1:40 this afternoon, about 12 and a quarter feet. And at 7:38 tonight, 2.27 of a foot for your low tide. Is your garden ready for summer? Local gardener Marion Owen will be holding a Q&A garden clinic tonight at 7 o'clock. Topics include soil preparation, raised beds, growing in containers, lawn care, mulching, weather, slugs, bugs, and other thugs. Free workshop will be hosted via Zoom tonight from 7 to 9. For more information or to sign up for this fun gardening clinic, send Marion an email, mygarden@alaska.net. tonight from 7 to 9. Should be fun. Watch out for people on the roads. Brecken's doing construction from the airport out to the Chiniac Highway through the summer. Artifact observations at the Kodiak History Museum. Grab your notebooks and journals. They'll be exploring a new museum object biweekly on live on their Facebook page at noon tomorrow. That's the next one, artifact observation tomorrow. And there's also a community sit tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Add a moment of mindfulness to your evening routine on Wednesday nights at 7 o'clock, live via Zoom on their Facebook events page, Kodiak History Museum. Kodiak Public Library offers curbside service to deliver books and DVDs. Place items on hold through the library's website or call the library to request items you'd like to borrow. Every Wednesday tomorrow, 10:30, the library offers a video children's story time on their Facebook page and YouTube channel. This week, Miss Annie will be reading chicken stories. And remember, Monday is a holiday, Memorial Day. The library will be closed that day. Next up, Talk of the Rock. We're going to be talking consolidation with the Borough Consolidation Committee.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.